Blog Talk Radio.
This is Conglomerate Radio.
Can you get me some salt and vinegar chips? And some now and laters? Oh, I really want a tropical fantasy. Some butter crunch cookies and Drake cake.
Of course, why would it work? Why would it work? We get nothing for this.
You're an idiot.
It's the greatest show in the world, you fucking asshole.
All they do is stay out there and talk about garbage. They just talk, talk, talk.
And don't forget my skills. It's because you are going to the Vega.
The verbal barbershop is in order.
Oh, good for you!
Yes, people, we are back in effect. Yes, Double Dega, live. We're hitting you tonight, 90 minutes, PAB. DJ Sid up on the other end.
Yes, 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 sir.
Yes, anybody who's listening tonight, thank you very much. It should be an interesting show today.
It should. On paper.
Yeah, everything looks good on paper. We can plainly say that the card is subject to change.
Wow.
That's the best way to put it.
And we also got to mention, could I give you congratulations, give you a round of applause?
Oh, you want the applause? All right. Dude, yeah, get on your gristle, homie.
Yeah. I would like to congratulate my partner, the PAB, for scoring a 99 on the old school hip hop trivia quiz today.
Yes, yes, I'm telling you. But hey, we gotta be fair. I'm not the only one. Congratulations to DJ Sid,
who
scored a 90 on the hip hop quiz today.
So I'm just saying, if honestly we got lower than 90, we have no place doing this show.
None. We have zero.
At all. Yeah, well, young kids try to test us, and that's not...
Y'all can't test us. Y'all can't feel us, man. Y'all can't feel us. I won't say you can't see me, because that kind of got played out.
No.
By the way, speaking of wrestling, I love Philly. I saw the pay-per-view. WWE just had a pay-per-view in Philly, and you got to love the crowd. Only in Philly would they cheer so much against Cena that they were cheering for Randy and Triple, the punches, the whole, every time Randy would throw a punch, yay, Cena, boo, yay, boo.
Yeah, it was kind of, well, you know, Philly's a tough crowd to get over there, you know.
I love Philly, though. Oh, Philly crowds are awesome.
Even in New York, too. New York, even the Garden, especially.
Yeah, we could break it down to three crowds that are like that. Philly,
yeah.
New York, Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Big up to all of y'all. You guys are holding it down on the real.
And, well, you know what? Even to some extent, Canada.
That's true. Canada, very passionate. They're extremely passionate up there. That's the word.
And especially if you're actually born in that country and you come back, forget it.
Oh, you're a hero. That's why Brett gets so many props to this day. It's like crazy, man. He's like the unofficial, like, king up there.
Yeah, wasn't it like a survey or a poll done that they listed Canada's greatest sports heroes, and like one in 1A were like Bret Hart and Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, it's not serious.
But needless to say, old school hip hop quizzes. Anyway, you can Twitter us with any of your questions.
Just plug away right now. Plug.
Yeah,
let's get some plugs out.
Yeah, twitter.com/DABodega. So get that out of the way.
Yep. We on Mevio. For those listening to us on Mevio, good looking out. Conglomerate.podomatic.com.
Yep.
That's Sid's joint. Also got some mixes on there, even though it's been a minute. But
you know what? I'm going to get into it in a little bit. But we got big plans for the fall. I don't want to give away the whole thing.
You can't give away nothing, but the best way to put it is we're approaching a year.
Yeah?
A year.
And we're almost, I mean, we're 30-plus episodes deep, you know?
Yeah, man. So, also, wait, let me get this out the way. We got to make this official. I haven't done it yet, and I'm trying to watch my P's and Q's, but we got to make it official.
The following program may contain adult language and theme. Listener discretion is advised.
Yes, and I hope before tonight's over there's a lot of adult language.
I'm very proud of you that you didn't get one in before the promo, you know, got hit.
I'm trying to be observant of potential prospects for the future. I just want to leave it at that.
Oh, wow. Wow. Trying to give that away. Yeah, I know. Well, there's a lot of things that I want to discuss, but I really can't get into it.
Oh, man, we could. Hey, man, I will shill. You notice how I'm plugging the show. Hey, the phone number tonight for anybody who wants to call, area code 914-803-4124. What does it spell? Nothing. But the number is 914-803-4124. We're going to talk about anything. And, hey, just for any lovely, lovely head honchos that are listening in, anybody who's interested in taking this show somewhere else beyond my mom's basement, hey, everybody.
Wow.
Hey, hey, Bob. Nice head on you. We got the canned laughter. I'm straight.
You are very happy to feel like you've been prepping for that all week.
Oh, canned laughter. We got one sound clip. I got it on my board, canned laughter.
And or you could call up 1-800-223-9797.
Oh, no, he did it. Okay, where's it at? There we go.
Thank you, Deuce. Well, we got to introduce the third man in the booth, by the way.
Oh,
no,
wow.
we don't.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
My sentiments exactly. Moving forward.
Oh, man. You could see him after this, like, the official year is up, that he's just going to leave.
Well, a little prospect. Yeah. Nah, I think, no, you know what? We have nothing. We do this because we're sad, lonely men. He is a sad, lonely young man. So, believe me, he ain't going nowhere.
Well, you know, girlfriend's, like, taking up most of his time now. He doesn't really call us anymore. He's only in it for the show.
I got to give him props, though. Got to give him props, though, man. Me and I, you know what? Let me share a story about Deuce, man.
Oh, boy.
I don't go out often.
Okay.
All right. Went out not too long ago. Brought Deuce along to help him break out, all right? Deuce right now is kind of in between female associates.
Oh.
All right. So I'm hanging out.
Yeah.
I'm just chilling. I'm not trying to mac moves or nothing on nobody, right?
Oh, obviously not.
But Deuce went in there. He must have had something in him. Deuce must have been feeling nice, all right? But Deuce went up to, like, every girl that night, like, trying to – he was kicking it to every girl. I got to give credit to this punk-ass kid because Deuce was kicking it to every girl. Like, you actually – if you watched him throughout the night, He started aiming high, okay? He aimed high.
Okay, he was there.
He aimed high. And he crashed high, okay?
Wow.
But he didn't stop. I guess with every shot, with every corona,
all right.
The stature of women that he was talking to changed, okay?
Okay.
Basically, he worked his way through every size.
Wow.
My man could be working, folding jeans at Old Navy with the way he was working through the sizes.
Wow.
My man, at the end of the night, must have made out with 3-plus size women.
No way.
My man, I'm just saying, it was crazy, man. It was crazy. My man was macking, I mean... What alcohol can do to people.
Well, I've seen his girlfriend. I've met her. You know, well, I guess I can't really call her your girlfriend now, right, Deuce?
But, well, I don't think she knows anyway. Hopefully she's not listening.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, he's so mad. So mad right now. Yeah, well, listen. She's a very, very petite woman.
he got, you know, like I said, man, it's crazy, man. I give the kid credit though. He aimed high and he didn't give up hope.
The idea is usually to upgrade if you're gonna go out, you know.
Nah, he just made sure he was walking home with somebody.
Wow, that's insane.
My man had his beer goggles popping off. Big up to all those that were with beer goggles.
I'm not saying anything.
All right.
Wow. Thanks, Deuce. Because he knows next week. That's why. He knows what's going on next week. And that's why he's firing off shots for me.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Albany, stand up.
Oh, no.
Albany, stand up. One of your alcoholic heroes are revisiting.
Listen, well, first of all, let me tell you how bad my email blew up when I made the announcement initially.
Ladies, he's on his way. Oh. I want to say that.
I made one comment that I was making plans, and and I'd like to thank one of my friend's wives who posed the comment, "Are you moving up there for good?" And then my email just decided to...
Wow, Sid got some lonely housewife action.
It's Paul's wife, Nimrod.
Oh, my bad. Big up, Paul. Anyway, nobody paid attention. Exactly. Go ahead.
Oh, man. Thanks, dude. Anyway, my email just kind of blew up, and I've pretty much spent the last 4 days trying to quell down these rumors, so I'm pretty happy of being in the birthplace of hip-hop. In the borough that is Mad Thorough.
Ooh.
No knock against Albany. I spent 10 years there, so.
No knock in Albany. You said the birthplace of hip-hop. Ooh.
Well, yeah, New York City, baby.
Oh, I thought you were saying Queens. All right, never mind.
No, I wasn't going there. No. We all know that the BX, but, I mean,
DJ Sid Shan up in the place.
Yeah, I'd be a fool to say if it was in Queens.
Oh, man. Oh.
It's not. Let's throw that rumor before I get the emails on that one, too.
Right, man. Like I said, tonight is going to be a lot of wrestling talk after a certain point.
Yeah. Do you want to go to hip-hop news of the week, though?
There's not too much popping off right now, in my opinion, unless you know more than I do, man.
Well, I mean, the rumor is about Jay-Z, Rihanna, and Kanye forming a supergroup.
Yeah, I mean, that's the new thing right now, the super group.
What is the last super group? LSG?
My body, y'all over your body.
You see what I'm saying? Hip-hop super group, literally. We can't even throw Slaughterhouse in there because their album's not even out yet.
August 11th.
And technically, none of them has even gone platinum.
True that.
Or even sniffed gold. Maybe I could be wrong. Maybe Buttons did.
I think, hit gold. That was as far as it went.
Yeah. But besides that, I mean, what other supergroups are there? The Firm?
No, that was...
Yeah, you know? It's very difficult to even get into it. But, you know, best of luck if they could do it, as long as Kanye gets off that I'm the king of the world BS and Jace, you know, Jay coming in hard and Rihanna's not getting beat up by Chris Breezy. Thank you.
Oh, man. Man, we'll see what's up, man. I heard the first song. It's okay. I wasn't feeling, you know, it's all right. I'm feeling DOA more by Jay-Z.
I'm definitely feeling DOA more. Cause I think No ID just smashes that beat to pieces. And I think Kanye does this one, but, it seems he's getting more repetitive. Except without the chipmunk music.
Yeah, but also, you know what also could be happening, too? It also could be too much too soon. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe he needs to fall back a minute. What's that saying? Something makes the heart grow fonder.
Absence?
Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree with you, totally. It's just, you know what? He just needs to drop out of the spotlight. He needs to... Something. I guess he wants to be referred to by a new name now.
Oh, no.
I like Martin Louis the King or something. I don't remember what it was, but yeah. It was one of the tabloids here.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh, Lord.
He said, I think, he was kind of dissing Michael Jackson, said he wanted to be referred to as the new king of pop.
Far from it, my brother.
Yeah, far from it.
Far from it.
Only one mic, and that's, you know, I actually, it's not even worth me getting into it to even entertain it or justify, you know, that comment, so.
Yeah, that's some bullshit.
Did you at least get to listen to Fabulous' album?
No, I'm not a big Fabulous dude. I don't take away his hustle, but I'm not a big Fabulous dude. Never was.
Me neither. I'm not a big Fabulous fan ever since he screwed up spelling his name. But, I mean, it's 16 tracks and 10 of them are collabos. And I think that's a little bit too much.
That's the formula nowadays. Get a bunch of artists on your albums. And hope that the plethora of guest spots will carry it, you know, like carry it over. Like the name recognition alone will help the album, you know, sell more.
I don't know. It's just very weird. I think Fabulous wants to. I think he's realized that he needs to stay in his lane, and he's better off with a collaboration than he is by himself.
Yeah, right, very true. Now? Because if you're in a collaboration and you treat it right, you can literally outshine a lot of people with just one verse if you come really strong with that one verse.
But I think most of his like biggest hits were collaborations with other artists.
Yeah, that is true. You know, whether it be R&B or rappers.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's what it is. Yeah, I don't think
since his first album at least.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's the problem that he hits with this album. Like he knows his lane and he's trying to stick to a formula. And I'm not trying to knock it in his hustle and everything, but maybe as a fan, I'd want to see a little bit more tracks with him by himself. Just to prove that he could do it, you know?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that. It would be. I agree with you.
It's kind of lackluster. So, I mean, but then again, what do I know? I'm bumping the 250 mixtapes, so. Which are ridiculously good. So, both
right.
of them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, check us out.
Yeah.
Because we're already, we're a little over 15 minutes in, and
yeah.
I know at a certain point, hip hop's gonna go out the window. This show's gonna revert to its wrestling format, which we've
yep.
done a couple times.
Yeah.
And I got something to bring up also before we go there. But you know what?
Okay.
I want to get into since we're talking about supergroups, and we
yeah.
haven't really played music the last couple of shows because we've been having fun. We've had Eric Adams come on, who's always
yeah.
always
entertaining. Yes.
We've had Nut come on, who definitely creates conversation. You know what I mean? He definitely is not afraid of throwing things out there. So we're talking about supergroups, so why don't we just play The One by Slaughterhouse, which is their leadoff single, right? You ain't gonna see it. You ain't gonna see the video on BET or MTV. You gotta look it up on the net. It's their leadoff single. We'll play that. We'll come back. Here's a tease of something I've been dying to get to, even though it's like 3 weeks after the fact. Little people are trying to ban the word midget. Think about that for a minute. All right? And we're going to play this
ponder
song.
That.
What happened?
And ponder that thought.
Yeah, for real, man. So let's play this track. We'll be right back. Discuss that before we move further, all right?
I'm going to wait till the uncensored version. Go ahead, play this song, and I'm going to get my thought out so the rest
right.
of the audience can hear it. Okay.
All right, here we go. Slaughterhouse, The One.
Pills. I'm trying to have rides to a car, and I'm going no to steal. I'm trying to have a rich bitch like Paris. care. Let's split a mescaline and mess with your head. I'm sexing the last and the best friend in bed. I love these freak women, something in my denim need a kiss. Call it Gene Simmons. They wanna bear me like Marilyn Manson. For all the whores in my Baltimore, Maryland mansion. I'm the one who wants to spear Britney. Give pink some black, put it near a kidney. I'm the one who always calls an affair. So every time your bitch burps, you smell my balls in the air. Yeah.
Put my love below by the speaker box. The one, Kate Perry tried to kiss my wife and gave me Dome and Katie's home, baby, it's a lie.
All right, people, we're back. That was Slaughterhouse the One. Anybody who's hanging on, go looking out. Oh.
Yeah.
Struggling.
Deuce being happy.
He's not happy.
I had Deuce give me some Kool-Aid. So
he is really not happy right now.
I think I'm drinking. Should I be drinking the red Kool-Aid coming from Deuce?
No.
Oh,
it might be spiked, man.
Cheers up. I'm a dumbass. Anyway. All right. So, like I was teasing before,
Yes,
people. Midgets don't want to be referred to as midgets.
I like how you put that so delicately.
Phenomenal. Okay. Freaks of nature don't want to be referred to as midgets.
Okay.
My parents should have pulled out. Don't want to be referred to as midgets any longer.
What would they like to be referred to as?
No, they actually said little people.
All right.
Person of small stature.
Challenged?
I think they said vertically challenged. I'm not kidding either on that one.
Right. No, I'm pretty sure that was one of the terms that were used.
But they said the M word. They want it banned.
The M word, the N word, LMNOP. The Q word might get banned.
They honestly don't want, for the record also, Lord knows gay people have been petitioning to get the word fag banned.
Cigarette.
Go figure. No, but you're right. I mean, they just want the.
I'm definitely right.
But
everybody in the UK can testify that, listening in.
So gay people want the F word banned. But the M word, they actually compared it. I wish there was audio out there, but there's not. There was a convention, ironically, in Brooklyn. There was a convention in Brooklyn a couple of weeks ago for quote unquote little people. And one of the things they were bringing up, and they were talking to news people, but I don't think any, video coverage, like any, you know what I mean? Like television,
right.
It's covered it. But a lot of print and internet places covered it. They want the quote-unquote M-word banned.
Man.
Because they said it's as bad as the N-word.
Well, all right. Let's not get that hasty about it.
It's a fucking word.
Oh, there's the F-bomb. All right, good going. I know you played the disclaimer.
Yes, I did. But
right.
It's a fucking word. Have we become so sick and mentally disturbed that midget is as bad as nigger? Really? Seriously.
Wow.
I mean, I really want to know. I really, we're so pampered at this point, only this country. It's stupid shit like this. It's little things like this.
Tell them why you're mad, son.
It's little. Damn, dude. Oh, yo, it's been a minute. Why not?
Tell them niggas why you mad, son.
Oh, it'd be great if I could have had one that said, tell those midgets why you mad, son. Ain't got no problem with no little people, man.
You don't.
I don't.
As a matter of fact, there's a lot of girls out there that you dated in the past that were just compared to some.
Hell, big up to my woman now. I'm just saying.
She's not a midget. Your wife is a lovely, lovely, small, petite woman.
But, yo, man, I'm just
You
saying.
Hung out with me all these years? I'm a small guy. Well,
almost everybody I've hung out with is a small person.
All right. Pause on that.
But yeah. I'm saying it's a word. It's a word, and it's like, yo, I'm sorry. It doesn't – a lot of little people, midgets, up until recent memory, still referred to themselves as midgets. You know what I mean? Now it's starting to get momentum behind it
right. Because
this country is just becoming anal. And people wonder why other parts of the world look at our asses and don't like us. All right? It's midgets that don't like being called midgets. It's fags that don't understand. If I call one of my best friends a fag, I'm not calling him gay. I'm saying that he is basically less of a man because I know plenty of queers that are fucking manly. All right?
Oh, they want a cigarette.
Or that too. Big up UK. You know what I mean? At this point, I blame language. I blame part of this society being a bunch of bitches at this point.
Wow.
And I blame the Kardashians because I can't stand those bitches either.
Oh, wow. Oh, no, I blame them. I can't stand them either. Although the sister is hot, though.
That's all they're good for. And you know what? And you know what? Anybody who's seen Ray J tape knows they ain't worth
it. Wow. You're right. It ain't worth it.
That's one of those that's all eye candy, my friend. All eye candy.
Oh, she's bad.
I blame them and Paris Hilton, man. Fuck that.
Nah, she's even worse.
Oh man, this country, not the world, just this country's going to shit. Just this. So midgets want that word banned.
Was that a BNN special report from a news anchor?
Nah, that ain't no goddamn BNN special report.
Okay.
That's your boy PAB just going in on something. That's all, man. I could go in on a lot of. I was, you know what? We haven't even begun to discuss wrestling. All right. Let me tell you something. I met midgets. I've met more than my fair share of midget wrestlers who referred to themselves as midgets.
Little Hiawatha?
Yet, no. Yet, I didn't meet...
Lloyd Littlebrook?
I didn't meet the Haiti Kid.
Nice.
And I'm drunk, as a matter of fact. So.
Was he drunk?
Yes.
Okay.
Big up Johnny Rods for hooking that one up. But whatchamacallit? They were all cool. They all didn't mind. They all were not bothered or offended by the word. They referred to themselves as in that context. And the truth be
told... Well, obviously.
And the truth be told, I didn't look at them any different. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's how you carry yourself as a person at the end of the day. You know what I mean? It's what you allow. I've said this countless times. I even tell my kids this. Yo, man, as a Puerto Rican, the term that's supposed to offend me is the word spick. Spick don't offend me, man. You can yell out spick. Yo, anybody who wants to call me out as a spick, like in anger, you're just desperate because you have nothing else to say. I'd be more hurt by you really stringing a bunch of words together and saying it with hate in your voice than whipping out an easy go-to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's no creativity and it's desperation. All right, so why, you know, and we're talking, let's say, like, nigga and spick have, I think, more of a negative history than fucking midget.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So motherfuckers need to get off that shit. Need to get off of that bullshit. And faggots, I'm sorry, man. I said this on an earlier show, man. Yo, big up. I said this when I was defending gay people with the whole gay marriage thing, man. Yo, the word fag, originally the term came from somebody acting less of a man. Didn't mean that they were homosexual. It just meant they were acting very effeminate. They were acting gay. Well, okay, duh, I just contradicted myself. They were acting... So, but that they were acting, they were just being wussies. You know what I mean? And that doesn't mean a gay man's a wussy, man, because I know a couple of gay men, you know, that, I'm sorry, most gay men dress better than me and are more in hell short as shit, more in shape than I am. They ain't a quote-unquote fag in that bunch. Unless you got one that runs away at the sight of a roach with their hands bent and are, you know, can't lift up anything past, you know, the weight of a glass.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So it's,
yeah,
that's my issue, man. That's all I'm saying. That is my issue.
Man, you are going in tonight, aren't you?
Nah, I haven't even begun. I'm just making a point, man. I got to make a point. I got to teach the people something.
Oh,
damn,
man.
Got to teach the people something.
Okay.
Yo, I'm the real. Do we want to see if we can get our guest up? There's no guarantees. Card is subject to change.
Yeah, by all means. All
right. Y'all already know what we got to do to you people. You guys.
Yeah, we gotta
put
take
him
a station. We gotta take a station break.
Yes, we gotta put him on hold. It's correct, but the problem is because we're doing the show less and less frequently, I'm finding more and more of our clips disappearing. What the hell?
I don't think it's less and less of it. I think it's just, you know, we're all prepping for the big picture. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Sorry. Big plans by the end of the year.
Oh, man.
We're looking into it.
You know what, man? Because we're going to go into wrestling talk, you know what? I'm going to go into something. The volume is going to be low on it, everybody. Sorry. It is what it is. I'll try to be back with you guys in about a minute. Me and Sid will try to be back with you in about a minute. Basically, this is us putting you on hold.
thanks for keeping me in the loop on this one.
Brother, you're always in the loop, man.
I know.
Get yourself, you know, yo, man, knock me off my chair and be like, shut up, bitch. Shut up, you midget.
Yeah. All right. Get to the song.
Hopefully we'll be back with our guest. We'll see what's up.
All right. This is the Bodega Live.
Yeah, we're live now. All right, people, we are back.
That is oh, man.
All right, everybody, as well as my partner, DJ Sid, let me introduce everybody to a man who has been out of the limelight for a minute for all you East Coast indie fans and all you Puerto Ricans who like hardcore wrestling, and for you hardcore wrestling fans that follow every fucking detail of wrestling, especially in TNA. And my boy Sid, who I also have to introduce him to, on the line with us live is the one and only Ricky Vega. Where is the applause, dudes? God damn it. Give him applause. Ricky, you there? Or did we lose you already?
Yeah, that sounds about right. The amount of applause I've gotten throughout my entire career.
That's terrible. You got to pop in today.
Yeah, as soon as I left.
Also, for record, Ricky Sid, Sid, my partner, Rick.
Sid, what's going on, man? Nice to meet you.
What's going on, Ricky?
Yo, Sid even knows more about your career in PR than I do, all right? I found out that today, so.
Well, I guarantee you this, Sid probably knows more about my career in Puerto Rico since I was probably high the entire time I was up there.
Oh,
wow.
Man. Oh, shit. Okay, we see where this show is going to go today.
Hey, you said to keep it real, brother, so I'm going to keep about as real as I possibly can.
Hey, man, but It is what it is, man.
But I'm feeling good. It's good to talk to you, man. It's been a long time.
You're one of my people. You're always one of my people.
Absolutely, but I just got back from a fishing trip. That's I think what a lot of guys do when they retire and leave the business, decide to wander off and into different avenues of life. And I went fishing, got a nice little tan, and spent some time with the family. So it's and I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, which is I'm probably the only Puerto Rican that lives here.
You're in Kansas City now?
I'm in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh shit! I thought you were in Florida for a minute.
No, well, yeah, I was. I lived there for about 4 years.
God damn, and, like one of 10 Puerto Ricans in Kansas City? What the fuck?
I don't know. I don't know if it's even 10%, man. I think it's close to like 1%.
you
like,
and your
like
family are here.
We're like the 1%ers.
Oh shit. We talked to Eric Adams like 2 or 3 weeks ago, who's like part of the 1%. Where is he now, Sid?
Oh, he was in Nashville. Where was he? I can't remember. He was somewhere else.
He was in some southern-ass state, like, talking about how, like, he's probably the only Puerto Rican. Thank God he passes for white.
Brother, we're trying to expand, man. There's so much land in these here United States, you know?
Plus the Mexicans got us outnumbered, so we got to get back some of the country.
Brother, I mean, everywhere I go, they think I'm Mexican. There's Mexicans everywhere. I had no idea there was Mexicans in Kansas City, and as soon as I showed up, they pretty much run the entire joint.
Oh, shit.
But speaking about Eric Adams, man, I saw a video of him on YouTube. I had no idea he was doing MMA. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's doing shoe fighting.
That's great, man. I saw one of his fights. He did really well.
Yeah, so we'll see where he's going, man. We've known him since he was a punk ass kid. So now, go figure. He's just a punk ass adult, but he's still.
Yeah. That's true.
Oh, yo, let me just put this out there. Anybody who wants to talk to Ricky, has any questions at any point, 914-803-4124. Yes, we have a call-in number, Ricky, but chances are nobody will probably call because we get more people that actually are too lazy to stay up and listen to the show, so we get, like, crazy downloads, so go figure.
Well, yeah, well, it is, like, 3 o'clock in the U.K., so they probably wait till tomorrow.
That's right, I forgot. You get heard in the U.K. also. I forgot about that little info.
Oh, sweet, man. So this is live over Britain.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, technically. But we'll get into it another time.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
All right, so basically, I had plans. The reason why this popped off is a couple of weeks ago, I had plans of coming on this radio show and completely shooting on the business because I kind of had one of those revelations, even though I have not been in a ring in over a year. And in spewing my venom to my woman in my house where nobody heard me.
You sure it's just venom?
She put in my ear. Funny. You're lucky she didn't hear you. What do we call it? She put in my ear to reach out to two people who have definitely been through a lot more, have a lot more good stories as well as, you know, fucked up stories. One of them we couldn't get today, but we'll have him in the future, which is Tim Arson, who always has something to say. And the
Ooh,
other
Finn,
one...
Finn's so shy and quiet, isn't he?
Oh, always. Always. Thank God for the zombie gimmick, please. even with the zombie gimmick, I think we can all agree he had the best promo of the night on that episode of ECW.
Absolutely. Yeah, he did, man. He did, you're right.
But... You know, had a problem getting a hold of him today. So unless he gets a hold of me by some miracle in the next hour, we'll set him up for the future. But I thought about Ricky, and Ricky, thank you again for coming through because I know publicly you basically fell the fuck out. Like when you left.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't know any other way to do it, bro.
You know,
the circumstances that I was in. I was full blown into the business, traveling, being away from the family. And when my son was born, he turned a year last week, he's a year old.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. I had an epiphany. And I realized that, you know, I have a son that's 10 years old.
Yes.
He used to be at all the shows over at Gleason's when we were coming up in the business.
Yep.
And I missed out on Jordan's life. You know, I missed out on a lot of his life, just being on the road and you know, dedicating 110% of my time, which, you know, it doesn't, traveling is just one part of the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got to be in the gym. You got to lift. You got to eat 8 times a day. And then the traveling comes. So, I mean, when you're dedicated into your craft, it takes time away at home. Even when you're at home, it just seems like you're in another world because you're watching video, you're watching tape, you're looking at your match from the week before, and you're constantly studying. And it takes time away from the family. So it was when Kellen was born, it was my 1 year old.
Yeah, a younger one.
I had an epiphany, and I realized that I didn't want to spend the next 10 years losing time with him. You know, not being able to see him grow.
I was at a
point in my career where I was about to take off.
And we definitely gonna get into that too.
Yeah, I still get emails. I changed my cell phone number 3 times.
Wow.
Because I was getting phone calls for bookings. It was too tempting. I had to literally change cell phones. And I decided that there was only one way to do it, and that was cold turkey. And that's what I did.
I can't, hey man. That's one thing. That's one thing that I know a good chunk of our listeners don't know about. Like a lot, of, obviously because it's just, I'm hosting the show. Some of our listeners know I used to wrestle, and even though I only had 10 minutes of fame. You know what I'm saying?
It was a long 10 minutes that we built.
Thank you.
A long 10 minutes.
Well, he'll be the first one to tell you. He milked that thing for everything it's worth.
I didn't milk it. You know what? Fuck it. Shoot. Johnny Rodge helped milk that son of a bitch. I wasn't trying to milk it. But I love Johnny, but let's be real. But but a lot of people tend to think if you train to be a pro wrestler, all right, and you start doing shows, even if it's on an independent level, they start thinking, I've come across more people that think there's some glamour attached to it. And a lot of them really don't know what you have to sacrifice to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. And if you, like, you went through this. I started going through this. You really went through this. Where if you already have a family, and I'm not talking, when I say family, I'm not talking about mom and dad. I'm talking about if you have a family, if you have a child, if you have a spouse, if you have somebody that's willing to stick with you, it's difficult. It's extremely difficult to really make it as a pro wrestler.
You know what? I think difficult is being polite. I say it's damn near impossible. There's no way that you can sustain a marriage and a family and be the wrestling business. I'm completely convinced of that. There's been no evidence to the contrary to prove me wrong. Everybody that's been in the business, that's been anybody in the business, has been divorced twofold.
Yeah.
And has lost their families. And if you name me one, I will completely retract what I just said and apologize on air. It doesn't exist. I'm sorry to tell you. And I know every superstar in the business. I know them all. I was at the Fed. Okay? Mm-hmm. I know Hunter. I know Taker. I know all these guys. I travel with these guys. I understand the lifestyles that they lived. I never had the opportunity to be in their shoes in terms of being under contract and traveling 300 days out of the year. But there was a period of time for 3 to 6 months that whenever they were in the Northeast, I was hitting every major venue with them. Anywhere from Nassau Coliseum to MSG.
Well, I actually wanted to touch. I don't want to cut you off. I'm sorry. I did want to touch though. I didn't want to focus too much on the negative. Like obviously you're not doing it no more, and there's a lot of reasons why. And I know we can definitely talk about that. But I did want to touch so that the people who don't know you, who do listen to the show, like know also the good things about it though. You know what I'm saying? Because Lord knows you also have stories. An epiphany at the end, you know what I mean? And there was things you sacrificed. On the same note, there's also a lot of interesting things. You know what I mean? Like people don't know, there are certain people out there that don't know that aside from me knowing you when us knowing each other when we started,
mm-hmm.
to us chopping each other in the chest till we damn near bled because we were chopping so hard.
Oh, yeah.
You
and we find that to be sane.
Yes, we did.
That's a sane act. I mean, to the people out, you know, sitting in the front row, there's some that are going to see a wrestling show for the first time. They're laughing and saying, oh, I can see this guy stopping his feet or being sarcastic in terms of what they're watching. Well, we're in the ring and we're sadistic fucks. We're hitting each other because we get off on wanting to be these great superstars that we grew up watching. Mm-hmm. Not the ones that are on TV today, with all due respect, but the ones that we grew up watching, the real tough guys.
Oh, yeah.
The Bruiser Brodies. The Bruiser Brodies.
The guys that you couldn't call it fake. You could not call the business fake.
No.
We're asking for a fight and a story.
Exactly. Exactly. And that to me was the positive part about the business is it was inspiring to guys like us when we were kids to watch these bigger than life figures beat the shit out of each other in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Week in and week out. And, I'll tell you one thing. There is some positives because there are moments where I reflect. I don't do it in front of my wife because she absolutely detests the business. And I mean, when I say detest, that's saying it in a very nice way. And I can tell you an incident that just happened a week ago where I had a barbecue here. The entire family was in town. It was kind of like a housewarming deal, and they're all in my new house, and we're all barbecuing. And my uncle came down from New York for the first time. My dad was just on me to put on a DVD from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Because he wanted to see it. So I said, okay, we're just spending time with the family. He just kept pushing. Well, to make a long story short, I popped in a match that I had with Apollo that we did in, I want to say Vega Baja.
Okay.
And so I put it in, and we watched the whole match. And I just glanced over into the kitchen and looked at my wife. She looked like she wanted to just walk over and just slap me across the face. And it's just the people that are listening to the show won't understand it because it's not like we can sit here for 5 hours and discuss why she feels that way.
She stuck around through everything. Like, and by stick around, just I guess to try to sum it up for you, while Ricky was traveling between New York, between Philly, between Florida, between Puerto Rico, between the whole East Coast,
Las Vegas.
That's right. She was home waiting for him. You know.
Well, she was at home holding up the fort.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, she was at home doing it all. I mean, she was being mom and dad, and you know, she was at home, basically, tight-lipped, and suffering because of the temptations that come with the business.
And Ricky, and for the record, everybody who don't know, Ricky is a pretty bitch, all right? Ricky is a
pretty bitch. Oh, my God,
you haven't
told me that in so long, Pablito. I don't know about that, brother, but, I've seen some ugly son of bitches be able to catch up some ass on the road.
No, but you're the sexy bitch. I'd fuck you, all right? I'm just...
Oh, my God.
Oh, Pablito, you're so sexy.
Thank you.
Wow.
No, but yeah, I mean, listen, it is what it is. You're in any type of sport. Obviously, this is sports entertainment, but any type of sport that you get a name in, or you begin to have any type of success in, there's things that go along with that. You know, there's rats in every business.
Yeah, because you've done football too, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that's actually how my athletic career started. I mean, I was, and I think a lot of wrestlers had a background in some type of, you know, athletic field, whether it was amateur wrestling or, I know a lot of them that were heroes of mine, you know, were actually former football players.
Okay.
Some type of athletic background, that's how it kind of began for me. I was actually an all-American football player junior and senior year of high school. Had a full ride to Penn State, but obviously, I wasn't a good boy in school, so I had to go to JUCO first.
Also, big up to Penn State. Right now, they were voted as the number one party school. So,
you know what? I missed out on that shit. I'll tell you what.
Beat up my old college. My old college on there.
Nice. Yeah, I missed out on that. But, you know, actually, the year that I was recruited for Penn State, I actually went up and I met and hung out and partied with Terry Collins and Keydonna Carter, which is pretty cool. Which is pretty cool. You know, I know Keydonna never had the career that I thought, and a lot of people thought he was going to have. You know, obviously the injuries killed him, but you know, it was great to see Terry Collins humble himself because I thought he was a real jerk when I met him. But he went through his shit in the league, and it seemed like he got himself together, and he actually had a pretty decent career. He still actually, I think he was comeback player of the year in the NFL this past year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't know that. So, yep.
You know, so more power to him. You know, it was great, you know, to see guys like that, you know, when I was trying to come up with, still have success, you know, in whatever field they're in. But I'm veering off topic.
No, it's fine. Dude, don't even worry.
No, that's fine.
Believe me, if anybody's the king of veering off topics, it's us too.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how it started for me. And actually, what's funny is when I started at Johnny's, Pablo was already pretty much a name at that point, and I think he had taken one of his first leaves from the business at that point.
Yeah, probably.
So I mean, I started training and you know, got broken into the business from, you know, a lot of guys like, you know, Sergeant Payne, which is one of the guys I remember that was there. Anthony.
Yep.
Who was later known as By Long in the ring. Taught me how to roll.
Well, I think Damian Dragon was still there at the time, or did he?
Actually, you know what? Damian had already left. Those are some of the names that were mentioned to me about guys that were from Johnny's that were actually, you know, that meant something or were actually working and doing something, which is Damian Dragon, yourself, and I know that Boogaloo was a guy that already started doing independence at that point. And I would say about a month or two into my trainings when I first met Boogaloo and I met his brother. And I met, you know, obviously Matt Stryker, who was there with us during that time. And then I remember, you know, Pablo coming back and meeting him. And I think we hit it off right off the bat.
Well, that's because I'm a clown all the way through. You wouldn't know I've been there for 10 years. You never know I was one of the elder ones.
Brother, it was because, I mean, I'd say one thing, and this is, again, very off topic, but, you know, believe it or not, and I hate to put you on the spot like this, Pablo, but honestly, and I said this to you before, you were actually one of my inspirations to walking away from the business. And
great.
The reason why I say that.
Hate mail. Here we go. Bodega Radio at Yahoo.
No.
Twitter.com/Bodega. Sorry.
No hate mail. And if anything, people should be praising you because, you know, Pablo's one of the rare guys in the business in that he was able to separate himself. And what I mean by that is he always put his family first. And I remember when I was sort of hitting my stride and beginning to get work out in the Pennsylvania independent circuit, and Pablo would come in and we'd still be doing school shows.
Yeah.
You know, and Pablo would come in and help all the new guys. He'd help me out. You know, we ended up getting a chance to finally work together in some shows. And I'd always, you know, say, hey, Pablo, why aren't you coming out and working on the indies?
That's true. I do gotta remember. You were bugging me at one point to try to. You were trying to hook me up with Jasmine St. Clair at the time. You were trying to hook me up
exactly.
With W.
Exactly. So you're cutting into my story, man.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. My bad.
We're hitting the, you know, Pennsylvania independent circuit. This was when actually Matt Stryker and Boogaloo introduced me to Offit first, and I started doing WXW in Philly. And then I got connected after that with Jasmine St. Clair and TPW, and I started working shows for them. Now, at the same time I started working for 3PW, Pablo and I were beginning a program at Johnny's.
Yep.
We're doing this whole tag thing with My Long and myself, and they were teaming you and Vinny together to eventually run a program with you and Vinny.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, obviously, I was working, you know, like I just mentioned, 3PW, and I remember in the locker room at one of the WW shows we're doing in Brooklyn, I said, Pablo, you need to come out and do these shows over in PA with me. I think you'd be a hit. And he you know, Pablo would just smile and say, you know, I'd love to do it, man. He's like, but, you know, I got the wife and I got the kids. And at this time, I'm with my wife. And Jordan's, you know,
he was still a kid.
2 or 3 years old at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, who cares? You know, this is where my mind was, people. My mind was wrestling first, family second. Where at that time, we're talking maybe, you know, close to you know, 6 or 7 years ago, Pablo already had that figured out. And it was just sad to me that it took me this long to mature and to figure out what Pablo was telling me, you know, in 2001, in 2002.
I don't know if that's necessarily, like, I feel like this, man. The way I looked at it, the way I treat this business is what I told everybody, and I still tell people this, is if you're going to make it, your best bet's to make it without any ties, all right? It's like a musician, like a traveling musician. If you're going to do it, you got to be willing to sacrifice, and you really should be prepared to do it solo. You know what I mean? So you don't bring nobody else down, all right? Me, at that point, and I tell a lot of people this, and you know what? I'm going to go on a little mini shoot right now.
Oh, no.
It's on now.
By all means.
What do you call it? If you got a family. At this point for me, even now, like if I were to go back and do it now, anybody who knows me knows if I go back and do it, I'm going to do it for fun. I ain't going to fuck with nobody. I would love to make money doing it, all right? I'm not going to bullshit nobody on that. You know, I'm not going to lie. But I'm not going to risk. I want to be able to know that I have a home to come home to, that I'm not struggling when I get back. You know what I mean? I need to know something is concrete when I come home. Point blank, like, I'm going to, like I said, mini shoot coming up right now in 3 seconds. The fucking Musketeer. I love Roger. All right? The Musketeer from ECW. I love Roger, but he was always on my case about making sacrifice. All right? I have a family. And I used it, and I told him, I was like, you know what? I'm doing this for fun. If I can make money in it, great. Because when I got into business, I just wanted to make it to ECW. And by the time I got to that level, ECW had closed its doors. So my aspirations were dead. The only other aspirations I had were to travel. But again, I'm not going to leave a concrete job. You know what I mean? I'm not going to sacrifice stuff I have here for quick cash and then not know when the next payday is coming. I just couldn't do it. Case in point, you know who else we got to give big up, since you were the one that brought up that point and now I'm defending it? Like Boogaloo. Boogaloo. Yep. Had a ton of opportunities, and he picked and chose his opportunities because, the truth be told, he also had a very good job. He had a very good stable job, and he did not want to risk losing that either. He wanted to make it in the business, but he didn't want to sacrifice what he had going. As a matter of fact, Matt Stryker, as a matter of fact, played that game, and he did wind up losing his job. Mm-hmm. It worked out for him, but he played that game. The story is with Matt Stryker. Matt Stryker was a teacher, was still teaching in Queens. He was a school teacher.
Yeah, right, Cardoza. Right.
And he got busted. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what was it? He called it a work. That's what it was. He called out of work to do some type of show. I think he traveled to Connecticut or something to do a show for the Fed.
It was Connecticut and also his Japan trips.
Okay.
It was two. It was like two instances, two or three instances. And you know, I can say a lot of shit about Matt, even though I do love Matt and I always got along with Matt. But Matt should thank his lucky stars, and he probably does, that Vince kept him on, because that was a hell of a gamble right there.
Yeah, that was a hell of a gamble. I'll tell you what, Matt Stryker, I'll never say anything bad about the guy, because personally, my interaction with Matt was always positive. And so was mine. I'll always be thankful, because my introduction into the Pennsylvania independent circuit came, you know, because of Matt. You know, Matt, he vouched for me. And that's what you mean. A lot of people don't understand. You know, wrestling is a lot of politics.
Nowadays, it's a whole lot of politics.
Yeah, I mean, it's brother, it's ridiculous.
I think that's also a partial reason, not to agree off top, a partial reason why I didn't also go as far as I wanted to, because I didn't play that game, not intentionally. It just wasn't my speed, you know. It was all about, if you're nice, talent should carry you over.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That's 100% correct.
I loved it when you made it, that's why I loved it. And it's funny, because my girl and half of the boys from that era can back me up. I had called it when you guys were still green, when you guys were like a couple months in. I had said you were going to make it. And this is not blowing smoke up yet. I actually did say this. I said this to a couple people. I said, if I had to pick guys who were going to blow up, who deserved a break, you know what I mean? It was going to be you. It was Matt. It was Tim Morrison. It was, I thought Damien should have broke this guy, Smooth Operator, who's also from Gleason's.
Oh, Mike Gallagher, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a couple of guys, and the couple that I didn't mention made it. Like, Matt did make it. Ricky
yeah.
didn't, you did make it. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that. I think I you know, I accomplished a lot of goals that I set out for. But I liken it to the fact that I wasn't willing to compromise any further to get where I really truly wanted to be. You know, and to, you know, a lot of people say, well, I guess, you know, you'll never, you know, you can't sit if you don't know what could happen. To me, it's like this. I don't really care. You know, if I would have wrestled for the Fed, there's one thing in my career that I never got a chance to do. And that was to go to Japan.
Me and you both.
Yeah, had I gone to Japan, I would have wrestled in every major circuit in the entire earth. Because I did Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. I did Mexico, I did NWA, I did WWE, I did TNA. The other thing that was missing off my resume that mattered in wrestling was Japan. And that was the next step. But I wasn't ready. I wasn't willing to go any further in my career to do that. And I thought walking away that I would wonder about that, but to be honest with you, I can't because I mean, I started wrestling when I was 24 years old. I was 24 years old with a 3-year-old kid,
mm-hmm.
And my wife. The odds were stacked against me to begin with. So to have been able to become a world champion in the business for the IWA in Puerto Rico, to be able to have wrestled on pay-per-views. And wrestled in front of, you know, 30,000 people on SmackDown. I think that's a pretty decent, you know, reaching for the stars type of moment for me.
Fucking ain't right, man. That is beautiful. You, in my opinion, realize that, you know what, that's why I said, this is what you just said. You know you're validating what I said when I said you did do a lot. You know what I mean? Some cats think they have to make it to the tippy top of, let's say, WWE because they're the promotion. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Without realizing, if you really do have a heart for the business, man, like I said, you did a hell of a lot more than I did. And I was able, one of the things I told myself, and I tried to tell the guys this too, is, you know what, man, I got to wrestle, like, even though they were little bullshit fair shows, I got to wrestle Jimmy Snuka, you know,
yeah.
I got to wrestle Tito Santana. I got a quick like 10 minutes on MTV. You know what? That's more than a hell of a lot of other people. That's definitely more than a hell of a lot of wrestlers out there struggling. You know what I'm saying? You,
yeah.
My friend, got to see a part of the world, got paid for it, got to wrestle guys that you grew up watching, guys that you know what I mean, still had a hell of a name recognition, got on paid. Like you said, you got all these places. Shit, brother, you did a lot more than a lot of others will get to do. You know what I mean? You should be nobody should tell you, you know, there should be no what ifs. Like, Japan would have been great, you know what I mean? But what you achieve, you know, shouldn't be frowned upon either. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that means a lot coming from you. You know, it does. It really does. It does feel kind of validating to hear that. You know, because you'll always question yourself. You know, you have those private moments. You know, and the one thing that I always feared was I didn't want to be 6 or 7 years old and say to myself, damn, that I walk away too early, that I walk away too soon.
Those thoughts are always creep. I think that's human nature. Thoughts like that will always creep into your head. But the
Definitely.
Truth is you do have to look at what you did achieve. You know what I mean? You have to – I'll put it to you like this, man. Lord knows, I'm pretty sure Sid has a couple of questions. You know what I mean?
Well, me, I'm just playing my role in the background. Hold up. Don't worry about me.
You're a bum. Lord knows, I have a list of things I wanted to ask you. You know what I mean? That alone should say, brother, you did a lot. I have a list of questions, and you my boy. You know what I mean? And I have a
yeah.
list of questions like a mark. You know what I'm saying? No offense.
Wow.
Believe me, man, I appreciate you saying that, and it makes all that I went through, there is some, you know, like you said, you look at some positives. those are some of the positives when you have people that you respect that respect what you did and what you were able to accomplish. You know, that you take away from that, you know, and you certainly, you know, you feel like it definitely wasn't all for naught.
Hey, brother, I bought, and this is the truth. I bought one TNA pay-per-view just because I knew you were going to be on it with the LAX gimmick, right? With the machete gimmick. And I knew Johnny was going to be on it, and I knew a couple of the boys were going to be on it.
Oh, man, that was funny. That was, if I'm not mistaken, that was the one that Johnny made a run-in on.
Oh, God. So do you remember?
I think he got hit over the head, homicide hit him over the head with, I want to say like a light bulb or a lamp or something, and cracked it over his head. If I'm mistaken, that's the one that the Latino Nation came out fighting out of the back with another group. I guess it was, you know, and I know Flex was part of that group.
Yeah, it was a goddamn race war.
Brother, it was crazy. It was phenomenal. It was because and what was funny about it is the only reason why I did it is because Johnny was involved. I don't know if you remember, but I actually had left TNA.
Did you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was, you know, obviously I had my run teaming with Homicide. This is after Apollo left. It was later, my original understanding was is Conan didn't want me. After talking to Moody in Puerto Rico, you know, Moody was, you know, very good friends with Conan. Moody Jack, I don't know if you don't know who Moody Jack is. He was one of the lead production guys for TNA. Later was pretty much doing all the production for IWA and some of the booking for IWA in Puerto Rico.
All right.
When I started up there. And now Moody actually runs AAA. He does the booking for AAA.
Oh, shit.
So Moody has a vast background in the business. He's one of the great minds in the business.
So you said you need to kiss up to Ricky, remember? He could get you a spot at calling AAA matches.
I asked.
Brother, I don't think either one of us would ever want to call AAA match, man.
Yeah, that definitely looks like a hole, and it'll be me and Dr. Alfonso Morales sitting there.
Oh, man, that's some funny stuff to have on there, man. I'm sure Moody has his hands full, but, you know, obviously he got the gig because he's cool with Conan. You know, Conan's out there. But later, Moody told me that it wasn't Conan, that it was Dutch Mantel. Because Dutch Mantel had a hard-on for Hernandez, who had done a stint earlier with TNA as some type of a bodyguard thing they were doing with Jarrett. The only reason why they wanted to bring Hernandez back is because he was still under contract. So I think he had a year left under his contract and didn't want to give me one. And I pretty much put my foot down that I wasn't going to keep working unless I knew that I had a contract. Yeah, so eventually it came to a head, and the reason why I said I always thought it was Conan is because I thought Conan gave me the kiss of death. And this was after we did the six-man tag pay-per-view.
Okay.
And this was right before the lockdown pay-per-view, and I want to say it was 2005, I don't remember. But afterwards, it was a very successful match. It got over big with the crowd, which is the main concern coming in, because we had Bullet Bob Armstrong in this match. So we had Road Dogg's dad, in this match, and this was going to be big because he hadn't been in the ring for a long time. So it was important that we got this thing over. So it was a big success. So the pay per view in itself was a huge success. So there was a lot of celebrating going on in the back. And I remember Conan pulling me aside, and he looked me in the eye, and he told me that I was in, that at the taping. The following day, and we kick, you know, the previews on Sunday, we do 2 weeks of taping the following day.
Yeah, that's right.
So he said, when you come in tomorrow, he was like, we need to sit down. I guess you're going to sit down with Dutch or whatever, and Jeff, they're going to sign you. So I was like, this is great. This is perfect. So I got excited. I came home. I went home that night. And at this point, Paulo, the funny thing is my wife was very positive and supported me in the business. These were the moments where she began to turn sour. Because I came home that night, I was very excited. I told her the whole story. She was like, "Oh, I can't believe it! You finally made it. We celebrated. We kissed. We hugged. We cried. It was what I had spent 5 or 6 years of my life doing to have reached that moment." The very next day, I show up for the taping, and Terry Taylor comes up to me and gives me the script, which is, you know, if you've ever done TV, you get itinerary and a script for what you're going to be doing on the two shows.
Right.
You're doing promos, whatever the case may be. So he gives me the script, and he goes, I was basically over by the catering area. I was getting ready to eat. For those that don't know, I have a very close friendship with Devon from Team 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So we always sat down and ate together before every taping. So he was kind of egging me on, come on, sit down, we'll go over the script while we're eating. So I sat down, got my food, sat down, started eating. Didn't even look at the script. I kind of slid it over to Devon because he had beat me there already. He already had eaten, so he wanted to, look at the script or whatever. So he started looking it over and he goes, you're kidding me, right? And, I'm thinking, kayfabe, right? You're fucking with me. So I'm like, whatever, bro. He's like, this is bullshit. And I said, stop playing, man. This is bullshit. He literally stands up in the middle of the lunchroom or the lunch area, because it's not a room. It's basically outside underneath a big, umbrella.
Okay.
And he's like, this is fucking bullshit. He was like, where's Terry? And I said, what are you talking about? I'm thinking there's something in that script that has to do with him, but he's not excited about. So finally, I got up and said, Demon, what's the problem? He goes, they're fucking kicking you out of the group in the first show. And I'm like, what do you mean they're kicking me out of the group? He gives me the script. I look at it. We're wrestling Shark Boy and Norman Smiley. Somehow there was supposed to be a fuck up in the match, and I get hit by Conan's little fucking sock, because that's what it is—a fucking sock. I'm breaking kayfabe. It's a sock.
Conan,
right?
Don't play that.
Conan, don't play that. He called me the Conan. Conan's a fucking clown, right? So Conan, he hits me with the sock, and they basically, him and Homicide jumped me. That was the first show. So here I am thinking that I'm doing two shows, because at this point I'm getting a nickel a show. So
right.
I need my money, motherfucker. That's what I'm thinking. I'm not even thinking about the contract with this, but the contract, kind of settled in after Terry sat me down. And the worst thing in the world is to have someone sit you down, because you don't know if they're kayfabing you or if they're just trying to save their own ass. But he's sitting there telling me, he goes, you're an awesome worker. He goes, I think you've done a wonderful job. It's out of my hands. They want to go in a different direction. Needless to say, I was, I did my job the way that it was supposed to be done, because that's what you do as a professional. And I left. And Hernandez came in, and they started pushing LAX, and all this other bullshit happened. So when this whole thing with Johnny came about, Conan became wheelchair-stricken because, obviously, the illnesses that he was going through.
Yeah.
Terry is giving me a call left and right, like, I need you to come back. So I'm like, okay, what are we doing? Well, I need you to come back as an enforcer. I agreed. Okay, how are you guys going to write this thing in? Well, you're just going to roll them down to the ring. Okay, you about 2 or 3 months earlier, you hit me with a fucking sock and you jumped in the middle of the ring, and I'm going to come back 3 months later and just push Conan to the ring in the wheelchair? He's like, yeah, basically that's what we're doing. So I was like, okay, so you screwed me once, and now you want to make me look like a real asshole.
Only in wrestling.
And honestly, probably the only reason why I did it is because Johnny was coming down to Universal, and he was going to be part of the whole angle, and how we feel about Johnny.
Yeah, of course. I would have done the same shit. I can't lie.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to come in and to work with your mentor. So that's why I did it. Once that whole angle was over, which it lasted for a couple months, we had some, obviously the, Flex coming up and a lot of the, Cheetah coming up and doing some stuff that we used for extras on some of the matches, and, having that match live on Spike, where Johnny and I get into it at the announce table,
mm-hmm.
those little moments are highlights for me.
Yeah, because you're comfortable at that point. You're on TV with people you came up with, which ultimately goes. It just feels better because it feels like you're making it, and the people you started with are there with you.
Oh, definitely. And one of the moments that will always stick out of my mind is after the taping was over, Johnny, Devon, and I were sitting right outside the trailer. And it was basically right after the match, and Johnny pulls Steven and I into this kind of triangular circle, and he embraces us and says, "This is one of the proudest moments of my career."
Ay, qué lindo.
It was great. I mean, to me, it was awesome. It was like, it made all that bullshit that I was going through with TNA at that one moment just not even matter. I don't know if you've ever read a blog that I did on MySpace.
Yes,
probably
I did.
About my retirement, but it that sort of reiterates, my metaphor for wrestling being like an abusive relationship. You know, that after everything TNA did to me, you know, beating me down, screwing me over, at that moment I kind of let it go just because that moment meant something.
Well, can I ask you a question? I'm just curious. You mentioned Terry Taylor. Now, I'm curious. Do you feel Terry Taylor was just being, like, did you feel like he knew more than what he let on? Like, he was being, you know what I mean? Like, if he had more of a hand in it. Now, I only ask this because there's the infamous story about when Public Enemy went to WWE. And Terry Taylor was the one that was in charge of that. Okay? Now, you know, he's the one that was responsible for bringing them to WWE, and then they basically got beat down by the APA at the time, Ron Simmons and Bradshaw.
I remember that.
You know what I mean?
I remember that.
And Terry has always proclaimed, you know, like it wasn't his call. He was the one, he was in the middle. He's the one that had to break the news. And, of course, he always got naysayers on the side to say, nah, you know, like he knew more than what he let on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's this. You'll never truly know what happens behind closed doors. But, you know, obviously, he's one of those people that sit in that meeting and they make those decisions. And, you know, we all know that, you know, Jarrett runs the company to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only so much that Jarrett can oversee. So he's going to take in the advice of people like Dutch, obviously, who has a great rapport with, you know, Terry Taylor. I will never truly know. Probably I can't really truly answer that. The best answer that I can give you is I wouldn't be surprised if he's full of shit and he did have something to do with it.
All right.
Just because nothing in this business surprises me anymore.
I hear that. Let me just let everybody know. We only got a couple minutes left, but we're going over. Ricky, if you got more time, we're gonna go post-show for all the podcasters. You got time, because I know there's definitely more I wanted to get to you. I just want to let everybody know we're talking to, for anybody who's listening live, we're talking to Ricky Vega, formerly Machete from TNA. Also, he hasn't been on, he's retired, everybody. But if you go and look at history, part of WXW at one point when he started 3PW, the ill-fated 3PW in Philly, he was in the WWE for a real hot minute. Much love to Ricky, but if you blink, you missed it.
Wow.
And he just was talking about his experiences in TNA right now. Yes, TNA, Total Nonstop Action, people. Yes. We actually have a real fucking guest on the show. And he's my friend. Oh, nah.
Are you really trying to diss Eric like that? Really?
No, I love Eric. I got to bust Eric's balls, man. Because Eric is part of – Eric's like a third member who comes in when he – he's like the drunk member of the show at this point. When he's sober, he comes on. And that's not necessarily true either.
Is he like the drunk uncle?
Oh. I thought you were going to say he's the Rob Bartlett of this show.
He could be as well, man. Whatever metaphor you feel comfortable with.
The many faces of Eric Adams.
Oh yeah, Eric is a friend of Ricky's as well. We all came. We all learned this bullshit together.
Yeah, brother. Let me say, I took him to Johnny Rockets in Hoboken, New Jersey, for his 21st birthday. And that son of a bitch can eat. That's all I gotta say. That's all I gotta say. I wasn't making no money at that time, brother.
Oh.
That motherfucker can eat.
Yeah, when Eric's been on the show, he's definitely referenced a lot of stories about the fact that he was the youngest one out of all of us to be there.
yeah, he was. And we treated him as such.
Yes, we did.
I mean, we did.
I did want to ask you also about the WWE thing. Like, some people, like, I only know a little bit about your WWE experience. Like, I know you had the tryouts. All right. Yes, people, he had tryouts for World Wrestling Entertainment now, formerly WWF, as I will always know it, and I believe as always Sid will know it as well.
Absolutely.
I want to get
technical. It will always be the World Wrestling Federation, that's for sure.
I want to get technical. We could call it WWF, but
Oh, wow.
Oh, damn. Now you're going back.
Are you bringing back the red belt, too?
Wow.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, we need to get rid of the spinner, okay? That's all I'm going to say. Spinner had its moment. So Ricky, all right, so he did have a couple – you did travel with WWE doing, I guess, a lot of dark matches, and at one point you were on Velocity. I'm trying to think of where I want to go with this. I would ask you how that came about, but I definitely know Johnny probably had a hand in it. Connections with Devon Dudley probably had a hand in it.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, the funny thing is my friendship with Devon began because of this. And what happened was is Johnny did one of his many infamous tapings at the gym, where a bunch of us did a promo, and we had mock matches, if you will.
Okay.
And there were several of us involved: Musketeer, Smooth Operator, Mike Gallagher.
Oh, I did hear about this. Yeah, you guys created. Yeah. You guys set up a video that sent out.
Yep. Yeah, set up a video, which, you know, if anyone that knows Johnny Rods or knows how it is in Gleason, you know, Johnny is always inventing something. You know, there's always something going on. There's a trip to Chile, or we're going to South America. You know, that never happens. Not because Johnny doesn't want to, because. You know, Johnny, he tries, man. He tries to do different things, and he's inventive, and not everything works out. He's like a mad scientist that, you know, I kind of compare him to, you know, to Doc from Back to the Future.
He's a mad Puerto Rican scientist working with a lot of welfare cheese.
Exactly. And his DeLorean was that tape that we sent out. Because,
DeLorean with a hatchback.
Yes, a big-time hatchback, yes. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because... Devon called Johnny after watching the tape, and he told. Obviously, I know this. You know, I found out later because we became very good friends, and we talked about it. But yeah, he and this is nothing against the other guys that were on that tape. You know, you had Vinny the Goose Grasso, Tim Yarson was on this tape also, and he basically asked, "Who's the Ricky Vega guy?" And Johnny was like, "He's 2 years and this guy and the other. You know how Johnny talks." He's awesome, he's a natural, blah, blah, blah. So, I was like, all right, we'll send him up to Connecticut. It's Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Send him up to Connecticut, have him report to Johnny Ace, and Johnny's going to give him a look. Let me rewind a little bit. Let me rewind.
I definitely want to also ask you about Johnny Ace. I guess Sid's heard more stories. I've heard minimal stories about Johnny Ace.
I definitely give you some Johnny Ace stuff. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I do some good Johnny Ace stuff. The fag. So actually what happened was is Devon saw the tape, and he asked Johnny to bring me to Nassau Coliseum. That he wanted to meet me, and he wanted to personally introduce me to Johnny Ace. So, and I was at school at this point, and Timmy was there, and I think Johnny was basically telling Timmy and I to both go with him. So Timmy and I were like, hell yeah, we'll go up.
Right.
So we both called out of work, because that's what you do when you want to make it, when you're brainwashed into there's nothing else in life except for wrestling.
Yep.
So you call out of work, and you ask questions later, you know, and the wife doesn't know until you come back home that night, and she goes, well, where were you? And you tell her, well, I was in Nassau Coliseum with Johnny, meeting Johnny Ace. And then she gets her hopes up, and nothing happens for 5 years, but that's another story.
All right.
So we get up to Nassau Coliseum, we meet Devon at the hotel. And here's the thing. This is my problem, Pablo, and it's always been my problem with Johnny. It's the only problem that I've ever had with Johnny. It starts off with me and Timmy, and it ends with Timmy and I showing up, and he shows up with Bobby G and some, I don't remember who the other person was. So now we have four people, you know, and Devon just wanted to meet me. So, and like I said, you know, I didn't care that, I didn't know any of this at the time. For me, I'm thinking Devon wants to meet all four of us. And I, you know what, I think it was Mike Gallagher. Don't quote me on that. It's just
you're just trying to remember who was there. All right.
Yeah, it's four of us, but we go up to Nassau and we go and we meet Devon at the hotel and we get shuttled over to the arena, and we meet everybody. You know, the whole and Batista was 350 pounds at this point when I met him. The guy was freaking huge.
Okay.
The biggest man I've ever seen in person.
I personally think biggest overrated man, but that's my opinion.
Oh, but Batista's the most horrific wrestler I've ever seen in my life, but the guy's big.
Okay.
You know, he was impressive to look at when I first met him. But you're right, he's horrible. But that, like I said, that's another story. But, you know, we meet, you know, and I met, and actually the first person I met was Vince. And Vince was coming down the ramp, and I thought, and the thing was, we ran into Shane first, and Johnny was talking to Shane, and Shane was like, I got to go tell, you know, my dad that you're here. So, and the great thing about it is the amount of respect that Johnny has in the business. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew who he was. Everybody. I mean, everybody and everybody. Earl Hebner was still there at the time. You know, the Fink. Everybody was walking over, Johnny. I mean, everyone knew who Johnny Rods was.
All right.
And the guys that are superstars today, Sean, that Devon introduced us to later when we went to go eat, Hunter and all these guys, they, you know, shook hands and they held Johnny in the highest regard. And that was great. That felt good knowing that you trained under someone that has so much respect in the business. Because he definitely had that. But we met all these guys, and, you know, after Johnny talking to us and me talking to Vince, and I finally got to talk to Johnny Ace, Johnny tells Devon to have me go up to Foxwoods the next day. Because I don't know if you remember back then, they used to do Raw on Monday, and SmackDown was on Thursday, but they filmed it on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yep.
So he's like, we're going to do SmackDown. I'm going to be in Foxwoods Casino, send him up for a look. So I was like, great. So then the next thing I know, I'm going up to Foxwoods, and this is confirmed. Mike went up to Foxwoods. So I'm pretty sure Mike was with us at Nassau then. So the four of us show up, and we do a tag match. Now, I had heat with Bobby and Mike and Timmy because everything got misconstrued. But the tag match that we did wasn't good, Pablo.
All right.
It wasn't good, okay, and that's just to be nice. And I've got to shoot on this, but Bobby and Mike are freezing in the fucking ring. And it's just what it is, okay? We all have bad moments. But they froze in the ring. They just did. And we tried to do whatever we could, but, you know, afterwards, the person that was actually watching us was Fit Finley. Fit was actually in charge of the women, which didn't make much sense to me because he was actually working with the women wrestlers, but he's evaluating us. But I was like, okay, no big deal. So afterwards, he sits us down, and he looks at me, points at me. Okay, he goes, you did a good job. He goes, the rest of you have a lot to work on. Right, but we appreciate you guys coming out. And that's just to make a long story short. I go back to Johnny, and I told him exactly what I just told you. I guess Johnny went to Bobby, and made it seem like I threw them under the bus, that all of them, you know, froze and they couldn't do anything. When I never threw Timmy's name in there. It was basically just Bobby and Mike during several spots that they were doing that they froze. And I didn't tell them they froze. I just told them things didn't go right. Bobby and Mike had a couple mix-ups. I didn't want to make it seem bad for them.
Oh, all right. Hold on. I got to get to the... Well, what it is the live show, we just got the... You just heard the warning, Ricky. That's a live show.
Warning and a half warning.
Yeah, in other words, like, we're going to keep on recording for all the podcasters, sure. But the live listeners are going to be cut off in, what, about a minute?
Something like that.
All right.
I love the Incredible Hulk walking away music. Thank you.
I know, right? It's gorgeous.
All right, get the plugs in, and then we'll go right to the motion.
You want to plug away?
As a matter of fact, sure, why not? If you want to catch us on Twitter, twitter.com/DABodega. For Mr. Pablo, it's blogtalkradio.com/DABodega. Conglomerate.podomatic.com. For myself with the mixes, we'd like to thank Ricky Vega. We're going to thank you anyway later on, but might as well get to thank him on the live show. Thanks for joining us. Next week, we might be on the road to Albany, UK. Tune in, syndicate the version this weekend. Am I missing anything else, Mr. Pop? Oh, email.
Yes.
TheAbleMegaRadio@yahoo.com.
Yes, send all your hate email to me because I'm the influence for Ricky quitting.
Man.
Oh, stop.
You're going to get shitted on real bad. Oh, boy.
All right.
Love you for listening. See you guys next week. Does that work out for you?
Next week, 2 weeks, who knows? But, you know, it is what it is. Peace, people.
Later.
All right. Let's see. And...
Post-game show is brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.
The most production we've done the whole show.
That's
right.
Correct. Oh, my God. Wow. If you haven't tuned in, thank you for listening to the live show if you actually just listened to it. This is actually the post-game wrap. Basically, that's the Pobs in the other headphone there.
Yeah.
And we're sitting down with former TNA wrestler. Actually, former retired wrestler. Does that work out for you? Retired wrestler. Ricky Vega from TNA fame, WWE fame, IWA Puerto Rico. Did you wrestle in WWC as well, Ricky?
Yes.
With the colognes. Did the chitlin circuit for a little bit, as we like to call it.
The Big Owl circuit.
Yeah. Oh, wow. He's the only Puerto Rican in Kansas City we've gathered.
Yes.
He has a slight distaste for Johnny Ace. Conan can kiss his Puerto Rican butt.
Absolutely.
Did I miss anything else in the meantime?
Terry Taylor is subject.
Terry Taylor is literally a cock. And, yes, that was taking the Red Rooster thing too far there. thank you.
That's good. I like that one.
And, all right, so we were getting into your WWE experience.
Yes.
I think I left off where there was obviously misunderstandings
between
Tony and Bobby and Mike.
Yeah, let me just clue in everybody because I also forgot to bring up, basically, for everybody who doesn't know Ricky, basically Johnny Rods, our trainer, had taken Ricky and a bunch of other guys for WWE tryouts, and as if you've been listening so far, it didn't pan out well. But the also one of the people involved that I want everybody to know that probably if they don't know the name, if they're like trying to look at, if they're on WWE.com looking, you know, looking at all the rosters, and they heard the name Johnny Ace. Johnny Ace is a.
Oh wait, can I get the title?
Go ahead.
He's the director of talent relations, Mr. Laurinaitis. He took over for Jim Ross. Somewhere after screwing over Bob's wife, something like that, like literally after, or was he in WCW before that? I don't even remember. I'm pretty sure that's the story.
Yeah, so that's where all this. So Ricky was sharing his experience in WWE, where Johnny Rods brought, you know, a bunch of guys through with Ricky. There was some mixed messages, and by all means, please, sir, continue.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, and I could sense it. It was the day that I went to train. It was probably like a Tuesday or Thursday, and I get in a ring, and I'm wrestling with Mike Gallagher, who was one of the guys that went out for this tryout.
Yeah.
That I mentioned that had a little bit of problem in the ring with Bobby G. So, you know, I'm messing around with him, and I guess he's getting ready to tag out. He has me, and like, you know, we're doing like, basically like an open ring type of, you know, workout. And he goes, hey, man, he goes, you know, don't forget who helped you get where you're going. And I kind of didn't understand what he was saying, but I sensed there was a little bit extra behind it. So after training, I kind of pulled him aside, and I was like, you know, and I kind of confronted him about it. He told me that, you know, Bobby had heard from Johnny that I kind of threw him under the bus. And I explained to him that wasn't the case, and that, you know, I was just basically telling him that it didn't go well, but, you know, that they kind of appreciated what I did. I don't think he was still convinced at that point, and that's fine. But about a month later, Johnny got a call back from D-Von that they wanted me to go to Madison Square Garden.
That I was going to touch on that because that is fucking cool. You are one of maybe three people I know that were able to actually work MSG. You hear this? This man that we have on the phone said worked MSG.
I think that's
yes.
A pinnacle right there. I mean, that has to be a pinnacle right there.
All right.
Especially, you know, growing up in New York.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, believe me, I mean, you're right. Anyone that's, you know, that's born in New York knows that MSG, you know, it's, I mean, every people call it the Mecca. You know, it's the Mecca sports. You know, so I mean, there's, you know, you walk through those hallways and you see those, you know, those pictures of Walt Clyde Frazier and you know, all the great, you know, superstars and, you know, Muhammad Ali, all the great fighters that fought there. I mean, it was surreal.
So you Stephon Marbury? Wait, never mind.
you know, I think I missed the Stephon Marbury promo pick. I don't think I saw that one there, but yeah. Yeah, I heard he's got a web show of his own. Is he competing with you guys?
If he is, I could give a, I actually went to high school with him.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Apparently he's eating Vaseline during his shows. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, he can go to hell for all I care. Goddamn midget. go ahead.
Hey, you know what? He's not completely useless. He came out with those $14 sneakers.
That's what your talent's worth, my buddy. That's what your talent's worth, my friend.
Yeah, I was able to play some money there. So, yeah, he was not a complete loss.
All right, so MSG, which, by the way, just wanted to bring it back to a point I said before. Also, just to bring it all the way back to a point I said before, not too many fucking people can say they wrestled at MSG, my friend. Okay?
Not too many people can say they wrestled in the Hallowed Halls at MSG, absolutely.
it was pretty cool. And so Johnny goes, hey, you know, they called. They want you to go down to Madison Square Garden. So I was like, this is great. This is awesome. He was like, and I'm talking to him on the phone. He was like, I think you should take somebody. And I said, Johnny, I really don't feel comfortable doing that. You know, considering what happened before, you know, and it's like, these guys are so pissed at me. And this is my chance, you know. And he's like, all right. He's like, I think you should take somebody, but it's your choice. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm just kind of thinking, fuck, you know. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if I go there and I get in the ring with somebody that's not seasoned, that's green, that's also trying out, and it's going to make me look bad. I was like, you know what, let me find somebody that I can trust. And what I did was I called Victor Arroyo. I don't know, you remember Victor, right, Bobby?
Victor Arroyo is a friend of ours who is right now, hell, he could have even been listening to the show today, for all I know. He was a wrestler, part of one of Gleason's guys. Wrestled underneath the name Vic Venom. Right now he is stationed in Iraq. Hope you get home safe, brother, if you're listening.
Amen. Amen. Vic's a good guy. We're friends even to this day. So I gave Vic a call and I said, listen, are you available to go down to MSG with me for this tryout? What do you think his answer was?
Shit, yeah.
Pretty much. He was, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. Even if it's to steal food out of catering, here, go.
Yeah, he was like, hell yeah, man. So I was like, okay, cool. So I called Johnny, I told him I'm taking Vic. And he's kind of pushing me to take Bobby. And I don't remember something. I just said, listen, man, I said, I'm taking Vic. I feel comfortable with him. I basically trained the guy. And I know that I can get in a ring and he'll follow me if I need him to. So he's like, okay. He's like, if you feel comfortable, then do it. So make a long story short, I pulled my 96 Dodge Voyager down into the MSG parking lot where every single, you have the fans sitting out, you know, by the parking lot area.
Yeah.
Where you kind of drive in into the, you know, into the arena, and they're kind of looking at this minivan, like peeking in to see who it is, and they see two guys that are absolutely nobody's driving an old minivan. So they're probably thinking they were part of the cleaning crew, for all they know. So we're pulling into this place, and you know, once we get in, we actually beat everybody there. So we're in the locker room and we're getting ready to go. And the funny story is all the guys had their bags there already, but no one was in the actual locker room. So I guess they were all in catering. And Vic and I are kind of like sitting in the locker room, kind of like, you know, what the fuck should we do? So we kind of select this one spot in the corner, and it was the only spot left. And you know, the door opens, and here's Mick Foley. With his little bag.
Couldn't be
rolling
nobody
his bag
better.
In. Yeah, nobody better. And you know, you met Mick over and on TV.
Yeah.
So Mick Foley comes rolling in with his, you know, with his luggage, his little rolling luggage. And, you know, and I see him looking around all over the locker room looking for a little space. You know, so Vic and I look at each other like, man, we should, you know, fucking give up our seat. You know, it's Mick Foley. You know, it's totally out of respect. So we both stand up and say, hey, you know, you want our spot? And he goes, no, guys, you were there. Don't worry about it. He just kind of sits his bag in the middle of the room. He goes, don't worry about it. He was like, listen, he looks at us, he goes, nobody here is above anybody else. We're all the same. And I was like, oh, man, that's cool, you know, and we shook hands, we introduced ourselves, you know. Nicest guy in the world. Mick Foley is the nicest guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, D-Von shows up, takes us to Johnny Ace. Johnny Ace introduces us to Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson is one of my favorite workers. Big fan. Of the Horsemen, obviously, NWA.
All right.
And Arn Anderson is going to be critiquing my match.
Ooh. Well, this is not Ole.
No, it was pretty exciting. So, I mean, we get to the arena, and I look out, and there's just, I mean, the seats go up into the ceiling. It was just overwhelming. It was amazing to be in Madison Square Garden in the ring. With Arn Anderson, so it was I can't put it into words, so I won't try. To make a long story short, Pablo, you know me, when I was coming up in the business, I came up a babyface.
Yes.
For those who don't know what a babyface is, I'm the good guy.
Point blank, if y'all listen to this show right now and you don't know what the hell a babyface is, just delete the MP3, bastards. Go ahead.
So, you know, I've been a babyface. So we're sitting down, and there's, you know, I would say about six other guys there that are, you know, also been referred by other workers under contract for a tryout.
All right.
So Arn comes up to us and goes, okay, he goes, you guys be working together, yeah, so okay. So he stands us up and he looks at me, he goes, okay, you're the heel. He looks at Vic, you're the baby. Vic and I look at each other and we're like, fuck. This is the worst thing that could have ever happened.
Yeah, because
you know?
At that time, you know, I'll just talk to Sid, because at that time in over at Gleason's, Ricky, like he said, he was a face, all right? But this dude, Victor, came up as a heel. He came up working heel the whole way. As a matter of fact, I think that may have been his first time working face.
Yeah, it was. It was funny you mentioned it, because the first time that Vic had ever worked face was going to be in front of Arn Anderson in Madison Square Garden.
Wow, that sucks.
Picture that shit, right? So, and then that's just half of it. At this point, all the guys are leaving catering. All the workers are filing into the arena. So now surrounding the entire ring are the entire roster for Raw. Yeah. So you have all the workers sitting around the ring. And Vic and I are getting ready to work. And the funny thing was, is you want to guess where our special guest referee was, or our referee for the match was?
I didn't even hear about this. Who?
What's the guy's name with the beard that acts retarded?
Sid?
No, he's what's his name?
No, I'm asking Sid. It's Sid.
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
Retarded beard.
He refereed my match, but he was actually a worker under contract. He made a huge name for himself in the Fed. He had a beard and he had like a retarded gimmick. I'm
trying to remember his name.
Oh, Dinsmore? Eugene?
Eugene.
That's it.
Eugene.
I can't remember the name.
This is before Eugene was given that gimmick. He was a guy that was basically in OVW that was coming up for the big shows on Raw for Madison Square Garden that they were using as a jobber.
All right.
So he was there, and Arn says, okay, we need you to get in there and ref. So here we go. We have Arn Anderson, the entire roster of Raw, and you have Vic, who's never worked face in his life, a natural-born heel, working as a babyface. And here's Ricky Vega, who's been groomed to be the next great babyface, working heel in front of Arn Anderson. The rest is history. It was the best match Vic and I ever had.
Wow.
I put Vic over. When he pinned me with his finishing move, everyone on the roster got up and clapped.
Nice.
And I looked up at the rafters, and I saw Devon sitting there. And he was on his cell phone. He hung up his cell phone. He looked at me, and he winked, and he clenched his fist almost to say, like, fuck yeah. So Arn jumped up. He goes, I got no critiques on that one. He goes, everything was solid. He goes, thanks a lot, guys. So we, you know, left the ring, and we sat down. And we proceeded to see six other guys get in the ring that Arn never let them even finish their match.
Oofah, that's painful.
Oh, there was a couple guys that got in there that weren't there for 2 minutes. And Arn just said, stop, seen enough, thank you guys. And I tell you what, the greatest thing that ever happened that day was Vic and I going first.
Yeah, probably.
I would have hated to have that feeling of watching him stop everybody and then us go.
Yeah, you would have been fighting against the tide. Forget about it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I can imagine how nervous you would have been. But it just, listen, God works in serious ways.
Yeah.
We went first. Everything went well. Next thing I know, Johnny Ace comes up to me, and he says, I need you to go to Boston tomorrow.
All right.
For SmackDown. Can you go to Boston tomorrow? Yep. What's my answer?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. So now I'm 2 days, I'm calling him at work again, and I'm going to Boston. So I told Vic, I said, listen, you want to go too? And Vic's like, I'm calling in work. We're going to Boston. So that's what we did. So we fucking called in at work again, and we went to Boston. So we hit up Boston, and this is where my problems with Johnny Ace began.
I knew we were going there.
My problems with Johnny Ace probably began a little bit before that, but probably when I first went up to Connecticut. This is where it really started to piss me off. So we showed up at the arena, we get in, we hit the locker room, we change into our gear, and we hit the ring. We're rolling around with Chavo Sr., Bunaki, Taka, you know, those are the guys that basically took time out after the ring was put up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to actually get in the ring and work on their craft.
Right.
Nobody else did. Those are the guys that did. So, we got in there, we started rolling around, and I told Vic, hey, give me a second, man. I'm going to go see if I can track down Johnny Ace. He goes, okay, so I run, and I'm like, you know, I'm looking around in the back, and at the precise moment, Johnny walks out of a room, and I say, hey, Johnny, how you doing? You know, you asked me to be here today. I know you remember me, Ricky Vega. You know, it was always cordial to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with his deep, cranky voice, oh, yeah, bro, how you going? How you doing? Let me get to you in a second. I'm in a meeting. Give me like 5 minutes, and I'll be right with you. So I was like, okay, great, great. So I stand by the entranceway, and next thing I know, it's 10 minutes to TV time. The arena's already full, and I still haven't seen Johnny Ace. So I'm like, fuck, I guess we're not getting any business today. So we went, I took a big, we changed. I'm trying to get to Johnny. I can't see Johnny. We basically went up to Boston, did nothing, and we left. So I called Ivan, and I said, listen, I went up to Boston. I said, I talked to Johnny. He said, you know, you're in a meeting. Never got to talk to him. Looked for him. The show started. Couldn't find him. So we just left. He's like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. The next thing I know, I get a call from Ivan. He goes, I need you to go to the Continental Airlines Arena, which is, I guess, by Giant Stadium in Jersey.
Yeah.
I need you to go there because we're doing a taping there. So I was like, okay, cool. So guess what? I'm taking Wednesday off too. So I call work and I'm taking a day off. I didn't even ask Vic to do it, you know, because I couldn't ask the guy to do it, you know.
Hey.
So I was like, whatever happens, happens. So anyway, I show up to Continental Airlines Arena, and Johnny Ace pulled the same bullshit on me again.
Damn.
And I'm talking like it was identical. Like it was, I saw him. I said, hey, and he said hi to me. He goes, hey, this time he knew my name. Oh, hey, Ricky, how you doing? He goes, I'm in a meeting. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry about what happened over there, but I'll give it to you. Give me like 15 minutes. I never saw him. The show started. Never saw him. You know, show finished. I went, jumped in my car, went home.
Did you ever
hear that? Pablo, that happened for about 4 months straight in every single arena that I just mentioned.
Did you ever work?
No. No, they would call me, come up, I'd take a day off, I'd drive up there, I'd report to him, he'd tell me, I'm in a meeting, I'll be right out. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe he's just kayfabing me. Maybe he's just trying to see if I really want to be in the business.
Did you ever find out what exactly was happening?
Well, here was the deal. I get a call to go up to Boston again.
Again.
Right, so I go up to Boston, and this time I go up.
Boston.
This time I go to Boston, the Fleet Center, and I go up with Rob Lentine, who is Ring Rage, Bobby Beretta, a.k.a. the Uptown Bad Boy from Johnny Roscoe. I don't really remember the Uptown Bad Boy.
Yes, I remember the Uptown Bad Boy.
Yeah, Rob, to this day, is one of my closest friends, and he went up basically just to support me. He didn't bring any gear, he didn't bring anything. He bought a ticket and wanted to watch the show. He just wanted to support me. So we go to Boston.
Boston.
And I get there. And I'm hanging out, and I'm waiting. And the good thing about it is that I think this is when the Dudleys changed from Raw to SmackDown.
All right.
So now when I'm going to the SmackDown shows, now Devon's actually there. So I get there, report to Johnny. He does the same exact thing to me. So I go to Devon. I said, bro, I said, I don't want to deal with this shit anymore. I said, if they're not interested, if they're too busy, then let me just, you know, go elsewhere. Let me just keep working my job because I got to pay bills.
Real, you know? Man.
He's like, relax. Let me, I'll take care of it. Next thing I know, Gerald Briscoe comes up to me. I'm sitting by ringside. And he goes, Ricky? And I go, yeah. He goes, come with me. So I follow Jerry Briscoe to the back. And he goes, we're going to use you tonight to work a match with Luther Reigns. Are you interested? So I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, of course. This is what I came for. So he goes, okay, you got your gear. Get your gear on. He goes, report to me. I'm your agent for the night. And I was like, okay, no problem. So I go out and I plug the B-line. And I said, hey, Joe Bristol came up to me. He goes, yeah, I know. I spoke to him. I was like, what happened? He goes, they went to a production meeting, and they needed somebody to put Luther over. And I told Johnny 3 times that you were here. And he turned to me after the 3rd time. He goes, who? He decided to go to Gerald Briscoe. He said, Gerald, I got this guy. He's from Johnny. He's been up here 5 or 6 times. He worked out in front of Arn. Arn loved him. He said, why don't you use him for the deal for Luther? So Gerald Briscoe was sold on it. He went to, I guess, a couple of people that I don't know if he went and spoke to. Next thing I know, I'm on the card, and I'm wrestling on Velocity. That's how I got in that match, working on Velocity. Devon went in politics. Because Johnny did everything for me.
It's fucking ridiculous because, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of line, but I dare say your career in TNA was longer than Luther's in WWE. I'm just saying.
Wow. That's probably accurate. I don't even know how long Luther was there for. But, you know, the funny thing is the next bit of chain of events almost became, you know, pretty important for my career. I did the match with Luther, and it got over, like, huge with Stephanie McMahon. And, you know, at this time, it was actually, I kind of skipped the point, a couple weeks before that, WWE had done that Today Show with Eddie Guerrero, Big Show, and a couple of the Beavers at Johnny's.
Yes, I did want to touch on that before we ended tonight, where I thought this was really interesting. I didn't know all the details about this. That you actually struck up a friendship with Eddie Guerrero.
I struck up Eddie Guerrero. It probably did as much for my career as Devon and Johnny did.
That's deep.
And a lot of people don't know that. And the great thing about it is I developed a really nice friendship with Hector Guerrero when I was in Florida, just because of the way that Eddie treated me.
The gobbledygooker, big up to
me. Yeah, brother. Yeah, you ain't kidding. He's still around too, man. And I tell you what, I met Eddie there, and it was, you know, it was just for TV, made for TV type of stuff they were doing at that Today Show. But I ran a couple of spots during that show. It was a couple arm drag spots or whatever. I don't remember what it was. All I remember is after we finished taping, show left, and the other two girls were downstairs, and excuse me. Eddie Guerrero comes over and pulls me into the corner, and for about a good half an hour, just starts talking to me. And in that discussion that we had, he's filling my head with so much information that I wasn't able to retain it all. But the one thing that I remember him saying was, you know, your path to the top of this business is going to be so hard because you're Latino. He's like, you got to work twice as hard.
I've heard that myself, and I have heard rumors that Eddie almost took on like a Roberto Clemente type of mentorship, especially before he passed. Like I would say the last 8 to 10 years, like especially once he broke away from like ECW, like WCW, WWE. Like, he really, you know, when he wasn't fighting his own demons, that I heard he really was trying to look out for the guys, especially a lot of the Latin ones.
That's completely accurate. I mean, that is dead on, and it's as truthful a statement about Eddie as there is. A lot of people are going to remember him for, you know, a lot of his wrestling abilities and a lot of the, you know, successes he's had. Some people are going to remember him for, you know, the dark side. A lot of stuff that he went through. I remember Eddie Guerrero for being a selfless mentor, someone that wasn't afraid to help somebody move up in the business because he was secure with where he was in the business.
Right,
he
so,
was secure enough in himself to be able to give advice, to give you insight, to talk to people for you when you're backstage at a show.
So what you're saying is like you, what happened was they did that, they did a thing over at Gleason's where you first met them, and Eddie actually took the time out, pulled you aside, and was really trying to help you out and give you advice. Which then, to my understanding, I'll let you tell it, is once he was doing these dark matches and not putting it under status, you started doing the job, you know, you were doing jobs here and there, basically trying to get traction.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, I'll let you tell it, but that Eddie wound up being one of your other supporters outside of Devon.
Oh yeah, which was so important because, like I said, at that point where I wrestled Luther, Devon had gotten moved over to SmackDown, so now Devon was there. All the instances that I spoke to you previously about, you know, the constant traveling for 4 or 5 months up and down to all these places and not getting an opportunity to talk to Johnny, I was turning to Eddie. He was the guy that I was talking to, and he was the guy that was instructing me. He was the guy that was talking me off the ledge. He was the guy that was explaining to me the politics of what was happening to me and what I was going through. And the funny thing is when Eddie pulled me over after that Today show and he told me that, you know, that it's going to be hard for me and I got to work twice as hard and you know, just, you know, giving me that inspiration, I remember him saying, I'm going to see you at the Fed soon. And it was 2 weeks after that, the very first time that I saw him again, when I went down to meet with Johnny Ace, with Johnny Rods and Tim Larson, I mentioned that first time.
Yeah.
And I continually began to develop that rapport with him. And the more I saw him, the more time he spent with me, the more time that I wasn't sitting alone when it was catering time and you were eating your lunch. Now I was sitting with Eddie. When Eddie could have sat with any other superstar that was in the back, he could have sat with Chris Benoit, who was his boy. He could have sat with any of the other people, but he took time to sit with me because he felt that I needed it.
That's absolutely beautiful. I mean, this is where I think ultimately that's why more people don't focus on the negative. More people look at, you know, he just had his demons and he was able to overcome them, you know, before the damage was done. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Or at least, I mean, I don't know if that's the appropriate thing to say, but you know what I mean? Like, he was able to just start riding the train. You know what I mean?
I don't think that, you know, and this is my assessment of Eddie. And like I said, I had that opportunity to develop that, you know, close rapport with him for that time period, you know, and you know, I just had to know him before that during his ECW, WCW days. But I don't think that's something that you just wake up one day and have. I think that's always been a part of him. And I got that from getting to know a little bit of Conan. Conan held Eddie in such a high regard. It almost felt like there was reverence whenever, you know, he would speak about Eddie Guerrero. And he mentioned Eddie a lot during matches when he was trying to put matches together and we were doing our stuff together. He mentioned Eddie would do things this way. And every time, and there was a lot of times, obviously he and Rey Mysterio Jr. are very, very close friends.
Yeah.
So he would get a lot of phone calls from Ray when we were around, and he would always ask about Eddie and what's Eddie doing and how's Eddie been. And it was just, you can tell from, and there's not a lot of Latino wrestlers in the business. There never has been. There's always been, you know, pick and choose one or two here, whatever.
Actually,
people that matter.
Funny. I don't know, maybe it's just me. I mean, I think, like, it's like on the East Coast, you know what I mean? I think there's a good number of Latin wrestlers. I think the problem is the ones that make it to that level,
yeah,
a few and far between.
Big time.
Very few and far between.
That's what ultimately I'm referring to is the ones that actually were able to get over that hump, and make, you know, a name for themselves. You know, beyond the independent circuit. You know, the Eddie Guerreros, you know, Rey Mysterios, and like you mentioned a couple of them earlier, Tito Santana was someone you worked that is a pioneer for Latino wrestlers. You know, one of the few guys that, you know, was able to get in that spot. You know, Pedro Morales, all these, you know, you can actually mention, you know, Latin wrestlers in a couple of breaths that have actually meant something to the business, that actually got opportunities,
yeah.
as opposed to, you know, other races that have been in the business. But, you know, and that's something I think was a part of Eddie. I think Eddie had that sort of, you know, in you know, his personality. He wanted to see the Latin race do well, whether you were Mexican or you were Puerto Rican or you were Cuban. You know, he was universal with it. And I think that comes from a lot of experience wrestling in California and the States, and that being so subjective to just being a Mexican wrestler, you know?
Yeah.
He got the idea of both sides of the, you know, the flag. You know, I definitely got the feeling that he was very proud of his Mexican heritage, but a lot of him was Mexican American too.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely wanted to cross it over. You know.
Hey. Well, listen, man. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but I was just saying. But he was. I think you hit the nail on the head. He was extremely, 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 extremely. You know, I want to reiterate that important. Latinos in the wrestling business, and he was extremely important to me in my career because after that, after my match with Luther Reigns, you know, he met me in the back afterwards. He took me to Stephanie, and he told Stephanie, we need to run with this. We need to run a program where Luther comes in and starts beating up on this kid, and I come out, and because, you know, Eddie's working this angle with Luther at the time, so he wanted to implement me into that whole angle.
That's great, though. That's awesome.
Know, yeah, and this was great. You know, Stephanie's loving it. You know, Stephanie's walking over, and now she's talking to people. Next thing I know, they're like, you know, we want to, and this was like late in the year. We're talking about when this match with the Reigns happened. This was like October, November.
Let me guess, that goddamn Johnny Ace.
No, not even. Johnny
damn
Ace.
That was great. Right, hey.
No, he couldn't. Like I said, Johnny Ace didn't do absolutely nothing for me. He didn't care. I wasn't anyone that he had any interest in. But at this point, Stephanie was sold on it. And, you know, Devon told me, hey, we're going to start running. They're going to start running this thing in January because they're not going to run this whole angle with Eddie and Kurt until the new year. And that's what eventually would lead, I think, to, you know, some of their big pay-per-view matches that they would do later on. But I was like, great. So what I did was Devon kind of sold me on moving to Florida. That's why I moved to Florida, was because the tax rates for contracted wrestlers in WWE was a lot less.
Yes, I did.
Florida.
I just heard about that recently too.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I went. And I thought, and at this point, I was separated from my wife because she was tired of bullshit. So I told her, I said, listen, sweetie, I said, I want to move to Florida. Let's go down to Florida. Let's move together. Let's start anew. And after convincing her, she was like, yeah, she had no idea I was basically setting her up for another 3 or 4 years of bullshit.
But they're trying to follow it. His WWE experience was pre-TNA, okay?
This is all pre-TNA, big time. This is all pre-TNA. So I'm excited, and I'm freaking psyched. So we moved down to Florida, and I'm just, you know, I'm doing some local independent stuff out there just to keep sharp. And then I get the call that I'm going to start traveling, and this is exclusively now. This is not going to the local arenas. This is I'm going on the road now, and I'm actually going to be traveling with them. And my understanding was, from what I gathered from Elon, was we're going to be working out a contract at this point. So what I'm thinking was it wasn't a contract to be a superstar. It was probably going to be a contract to be developmental. And that's my thought on it, you know. In this business, you can never think too big because they bring you back down too quickly. So I'm thinking, at least they'll lock me up, you know. So this is good. Big long story short, I found this wrestling school, FXE Wrestling, at the same time that was over in Orlando, and this is by the holidays. So I just wanted to kind of stay sharp because you know how we Puerto Ricans eat during the holidays.
Yes.
Mucho lechon, all that good stuff. So Ricky Baker was going to eat, but Ricky Baker needs to stay in shape at the same time and burn some calories. So Ricky Baker was getting in the ring during Christmas and doing all his stuff while he was eating all this lechon and panini and all this good stuff. Getting ready because in January I was hitting the road. And this is where the you know, things happened, Pablo, and the first snag in the road came. I was training. This was a couple days before New Year's. And I was taking a simple arm drag. When I took an arm drag and I landed, my knee locked up. And then I was just like, oh, shit, you know, and it unlocked. It kind of locked and unlocked. I was like, oh, shit, I must have jammed it, you know. I got up and I didn't really feel anything, so I was like, okay. So I kept, you know, kind of going with, these are drills. I wasn't, you know, working a mattress. I was just working drills at the gym. So I get up and I take a hip toss and run the drill. I took an arm drag. When I landed, my leg locked, and this time it locked for a lot longer than the first time. So I got scared. So I said, shit, I mean, you know, I rolled out of the ring, started stretching, and my leg locked while I was stretching.
Jesus Christ.
So I said, you know what? I think I'm fucking overworking myself. I need to just go home and chill. So I took the rest of the year off. I came in the very first week of January, and I got back in the ring. When I was stretching, doing a butterfly stretch, my knee locked, and it never unlocked. I couldn't get my knee to unlock. I had to get a couple of guys to come and help straighten my leg out. I didn't know what it was, but there was a snap. Make a long story short, I went in, got an MRI. I had a 30% tear of my ACL and a bucket tear of a meniscus in my knee, my right knee.
After all, wrestling is fake.
Please, they should have told me that before I started.
Oh, God.
So now I have to go in and see a doctor. When I went to go see the doctor, I told him, I said, it's locking in. Is there any way that I can keep it from locking in? Because, you know, I got to go on the road. He was like, do me a favor. He was like, cross your leg like you would if you were sitting, but cross the leg that's locking. As soon as I went halfway to lock it, Pablo,
yeah.
Or rather to cross it, my knee locked completely and it wouldn't unlock. And he looked at me. He goes, I'm going to unlock this for you. It's going to hurt. Just give me. So he just kind of pulled my leg. When he pulled it, I felt it was excruciating pain. He goes, 3 to 6 months. I'm going to have to scold you in 3 to 6 months. You're going to be out.
I'm guessing that was that deaded the WWE.
I called Devon the next day. I couldn't get to him. Left him a message. He called me 2 days later. He had just gotten back in Japan. Called me 2 days later, and he was like, hey. He said, what's up, man? I said, hey, what's going on? But he's like, you ready to go? Because we're going over there next week. You got your shit packed? And, you know, kind of like, you know, being funny about it and being excited for me and, you know, trying to get me up. And I told Devon, I'm not going on the road, man. I got to have surgery on my knee. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah. I was like, my meniscus tore, and I'm done. I got 3 to 6 months. So I could just hear it in his voice, you know, because you could sense that he wanted it as much as I did. And it was pretty much, oh, yeah, you jumped ahead of my story. But yeah,
no, I'm sorry. Right
there. Actually, I called Eddie after that, and I told him what happened. And, you know, he was, you know, very positive about it. He's like, hey, he's like, shit like that happens. It's better it happened now than it happens when you hit the road, because then they, you know, they're going to see you as injury prone. He's like, get your shit fixed, get it, you know, hooked up, and don't worry about it. I'm going to keep an ear open for you. I'm, you know, when you're ready to come back, you know, I'll help you out. You know, so I had the surgery. I was out for 3 to 6 months. I came back in August later that year, started wrestling. At that time, Devon called me that he and Bubba were leaving the Fed. And this is where I made the worst decision of my career. Forever will be the worst decision of my career, and this was the turning point of my career. They were getting out of the Devon had a falling out with Johnny Ace. Contract negotiations didn't go well.
No,
he was asking me. Yeah, he was asking me about TNA. Now, I had spent some time backstage at TNA, but I never did anything with TNA.
Okay.
I just knew a lot of the guys that worked there, and I was just go see some of the tapings. I didn't, you know, obviously I didn't have the pads. I wouldn't hung out backstage. But I wasn't working with TNA. But I told him there's some, you know, there's some good guys back there. You know, nice environment. And he was like, all right. He's like, we're leaving. We're gonna sign with TNA. So I said, okay. And then we talked about it a little bit. I said, listen, I'm back. I'm in shape. My knee's feeling good. I've had a couple matches under my belt. I kind of want to, you know, go back to the Fed and see what happens. And Devon told me, don't go. That now is not the right time. Shit is really fucked up there. Don't worry about it. I'll get you into TNA.
Oh, man. You know what? I think you should stop everything right there. We got to have you on again.
Absolutely.
So I can bore you for another 2 hours?
What happened?
Well, so I can bore you for another 2 hours?
No, I'm right now, I'm captivated, because I know you and I didn't know. I love shit like this. But then again, I've always loved shit like this. This is why I became a wrestler. All right? I don't know. Sid, are you still awake? Because you've been either you're really captivated or you fell out and you're being really nice.
I'm a mark right now.
Sid, wake up, brother. I know you're fine.
No, I'm good. I'm captivated, Ricky. Absolutely. I'm very interested in hearing stories like this.
Yeah, I'm just gonna cut this short because I know eventually, even though we're podcasting it at this point, there's a cap also on the podcast.
Hands down,
though, I do know for a fact this is the longest show we've done to date, and I don't mean that as a bad thing.
No, I just mean there is
so much to get to that
we haven't even done Puerto Rico.
That's what I'm saying, and I'm really curious about Puerto Rico, and I'm only thinking we were supposed to have Tim Morrison today. If I had him on, I can only imagine.
I don't think stories you could share.
Well, you know what's funny is it was meant to be this way because if you get Tim on next time, Tim could probably contribute a lot because we work together in PR.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I had to actually inform him that.
Yeah, Tim and I actually worked the program together.
Let's save that. There's a whole lot more, and I really do. You know what? We're going to have to do a part two before within the month. We got to do a part two today.
I definitely agree.
If you will be back on, brother, we got to do a part two to this, and we got to continue right off of you jumping to TNA. Even though we did talk about TNA, we got to remember that the bookmark is at Dudley's bounced. You're better, but your quote was probably the dumbest move you made today.
Yeah, undoubtedly the dumbest move that I've ever made in my life.
All right, don't go any further. We'll leave that as a tease for those that are listening. That's a hell of a tease.
That is a hell of a tease. Do you want to, you know what? We plug ourselves like little bitches here on the show. Anything you would like to plug, Ricky?
You know what? I don't have anything to plug. I'm not an entertainer anymore. But I will say this. I got a big plug for the unpredictable world of professional wrestling in Brooklyn. Johnny Rods, the best wrestling school there is in the entire nation. It's over on Front Street in Brooklyn. Look it up if you want to become a professional.
I know the website. It's www.online.net. I'm pretty sure it's .net.
So some great, Whipper Whip, Ricky Vega, Devon Dudley.
I like how he has a Ricky Vega. There's a roll of the R on the Ricky
Vega.
It's bringing back the old school. I don't know.
Ricky Vega. No, go ahead.
But you know how many 50-50 announcements I got during my matches? I was beginning to think that Johnny wasn't interested.
Oh, my God, Sid, you don't even want to know. Our shows are the only shows where they were selling, they were playing the numbers. They were doing raffling off numbers.
Brother, talk about carnival meets wrestling.
Come on, WWE, where the carny still lives.
Brother, you're not kidding. But yeah, I plug Johnny's school any day of the week, and support our troops. You know, Victor Royal, we mentioned him earlier.
Yes,
former pro wrestler. Yeah, he's overseas, and obviously a lot of people out there with friends and family that are overseas. We pray for him, and thanks for having me on, man. I had a blast.
You
made me remember a lot of things that I had trapped in this memory box.
I just hope your girl is not ice grilling you right now.
No, she's actually, now is the Facebook.com time for her, she's over there chatting up
like,
the storm.
It's bad enough I'm going to get at least one piece of hate mail for being your inspiration for quitting, and now your girl is going to want to cut my nuts off the next time you guys come to New York, so it's not a good look for me right now, okay?
I tell you what, Pablo, you want another good plug for your next show? You helping me leave the wrestling business? Probably saved me, saved my life, because I was going down a path of destruction. That for those that want to find out how bad it got, they're gonna have to tune into the next show to find out, because
that's an excellent falling off point right there.
Oh yeah, so Ricky Vega is gonna come back. There will be a part two to this show.
That's definitely gonna happen.
Little shoot in there, a whole. This is the audio book of Ricky Vega. All right.
Hey, make sure I get a copy, all right, for the kids, right?
Oh, I'll autograph it. Anyway, next show you guys will find out. Thanks again to Ricky Vega for being on. He will be coming back. You guys already heard all the plugs. Conglomerate.podomatic.com for DJ Sid.
Yep.
We are on Mevio. Shout-outs to the UK who have been hanging with us. blogtalkradio.com/thebodega. We have a bunch of Po-Ass Ricans, including Ricky Vega, who's originally a Po-Ass Rican as well. He's just in Kansas City now. All right. We are...